workers in protest, their respect to, or respect their right to protest, their right to strike, but also specifically respect the safety of the workers and of their occupation, of their tent in front of the embassy. They've had threats against both their own security, their own personal safety, and also against the tent encampment which they've set up across from the embassy, threats of being evicted essentially or forcibly removed from their location there where they've been for 3 years. So it's very important that the embassy be aware that there is vigilance about that in the United States, that people care about that, and that people insist the embassy respect the rights under Colombian and international law, international standards, of these workers to protest.
Jorge, ¿hay otra cosa que quieres decir esta noche a las compañeras y los compañeros acá?
Sí, pues primero que todo recordarles que aunque somos trabajadores de Sudamérica, recordarles que nos une las mismas situaciones de ser trabajadores del mundo, que también soportamos las mismas situaciones que están viviendo en Estados Unidos, con muchos atropellos en Colombia. Realmente el apoyo y la solidaridad de la comunidad en Portland es muy importante para los trabajadores en Colombia. El respaldo de los trabajadores y de los compañeros en Portland, pues ha garantizado un poco poder seguir la lucha y pues que esperamos seguir contando con la ayuda.
Jorge says that although they're workers in South America, they're facing many situations very similar to what we face in the U.S. And I'm going to insert here that Jorge's been to the U.S. twice. He knows what he's talking about here. That we're fighting a very similar fight, that there's sound reason for us to care, not only because of their situation, but also our own. And again, appreciates very much the support that they've gotten from Portland and the U.S. in general, and very much needs that to continue in this very difficult moment. Jorge está acabando. Sí, diga.
Recordarles, John, disculpa que son 3 años donde hemos soportado. El viernes cumplimos 3 años de esta resistencia laboral. Son 3 años muy duros para nosotros y nuestras familias. Estamos enfrentando situaciones más duras por los embargos y los problemas que tenemos de hipotecas de las casas. Y pues realmente esto pues preocupa más nuestra lucha porque son más problemas, pero realmente estamos muy agradecidos con la ayuda de la gente en Portland. Tenemos esperanza de que vamos a seguir adelante, de que vamos a llegar a la victoria. Nuestra lucha es una lucha obrera guiada por Dios. Decimos la verdad y porque trabajamos con la verdad, por eso sabemos que estamos predestinados a la victoria. Por eso realmente agradecemos la ayuda de la comunidad de Portland y por supuesto esperamos que nos sigan acompañando y que nos sigan llevando en el corazón como nos han venido apoyando y ayudando hasta el momento. Solo queremos agradecerles inmensamente por todo lo que han hecho por nosotros. Muchas gracias.
Jorge says it'll be 3 years Friday. They've been in occupation in the tents. It's been very difficult, not only for the workers, but also for their families, increasingly so. They're facing evictions. They're facing loss of their homes. That makes the situation even tougher. This is not just men and women. This is also children who are involved in these situations. Very difficult for all of them. He thanks everyone again for the support, and they have the hope. They have the faith of victory. They know that their struggle is just. They believe that it is blessed, that they have God on their side, that in the end they will win, they will prevail. He asks us to carry them in our hearts and to stand by them in their struggle.
Gracias, Jorge. Les agradecemos su lucha justa, porque en esta economía globalizada, como dices, compartimos, si tarde o temprano, la misma suerte como la misma clase obrera. Gracias, Jorge, y abrazos grandes a todos y todas allá.
Gracias. A ustedes, muchas gracias.
Buenas noches, Jorge.
Buenas noches, gracias a todos. Muchas gracias.
That's been Labor Radio for tonight. Our guest in studio, Romeo Sosa from Portland and Vos, and in Colombia by phone, Jorge Parra from Asotricol. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU wants you. Yes, you. Are you excited about the new possibilities for local independent media? Are you ready to help KABU reach out and grow stronger in the community? We're looking for candidates for KABU's board of directors, and we've extended our search through July 31st. So if you'd like to share your skills with the people who share your values, download a copy of our board candidate package at kboo.fm. Or you can pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. July 31st, so don't delay. And we look forward to seeing more of you at KABU.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host this evening, Dakota Kennedy. On tonight's program, we will be discussing the school-to-prison pipeline. The school-to-prison pipeline describes how kids are channeled out of the classroom and into the criminal justice system. Joining us tonight is Mark McKechnie, Executive Director for Youth Rights and Justice. Although a nationwide trend, we will be discussing how the pipeline extends to the families in Oregon. Later, we will also hear directly from youth who are incarcerated about their experience both in school and in the prison system. Welcome to Prison Pipeline, Mark.
Thank you, Dakota.
Tell us a little bit about Youth Rights and Justice and your role there.
Well, really briefly, we're a public defender organization. We're contracted to represent children and youth in the juvenile court system, including both children in foster care and youth in the juvenile delinquency system. And based on our experience representing them over nearly 40 years, we became very interested in their school success and realized that they were really struggling and have taken steps through programming and legislation to try to help improve their outcomes.
Okay, let's break it down a little bit and start by discussing the school to prison pipeline. Can you tell us a little bit about the types of crimes that are taking teens from the classroom to the cell block?
Sure. I think the one thing to understand right up front is that often it's not a direct pipeline. The kids are not committing crimes in schools for the most part. A lot of the discipline is in response to actually minor behaviors that most of us did when we were in school. That makes the pipeline more insidious because there isn't that direct connection. Fortunately, in Oregon, we have not seen the kind of practices of Meridian, Mississippi, for example, where they were literally taking kids out of class, sending them directly to juvenile detention without stopping over in court to have any due process in between. The U.S. Department of Justice is looking at those practices, but we haven't seen something so egregious in Oregon. The really insidious aspect of the school to prison pipeline is that it's the school discipline that sets children up to eventually enter the juvenile justice system. Not only are students who are suspended more likely to eventually drop out, there have been studies showing that if you're a freshman and you've been suspended, you're twice as likely to drop out of school by the 12th grade. There was also a major study in Texas that looked at all students starting in the 7th grade, followed them through 12th grade year, and found out that those who were suspended 1 year were three times as likely to enter the justice system the following year. And that's essentially the school-to-prison pipeline.
Wow. When we're talking about the school-to-prison pipeline, is there a profile, or what type of students are normally usually getting caught up in this system?
I think your listeners have probably heard about the racial disparities in the justice system overall, and we see them in the school-to-prison pipeline as well. So students of color, primarily African-American, Native American, and Latino students, are more likely to be suspended or expelled from school and therefore more likely to end up in the justice system as well. Students with disabilities are also grossly overrepresented in discipline. And in general, what you see are low-income and poor students being disproportionately disciplined and then ending up in the justice system as well. The Oregon Youth Authority is sort of the last stop in our juvenile justice system. And they found that of all the youth who entered their programs, and that includes treatment, community parole and probation, as well as their incarceration programs like at McLaren, 85% of youth had been suspended or expelled from school at least once, and most had been kicked out multiple times. And there were only 15% of all the youth they served that year who had never been suspended or expelled. So I think that also illustrates how the school-to-prison pipeline works. You know, we have a big interest in children who are abused or neglected and want to focus on their educational success in order to prevent them from crossing over into the juvenile justice system. And we created a program called SchoolWorks to help them. And one of the youth I worked with years ago kind of illustrates the kind of struggles that our clients have and how we can help turn them around. He had been in foster care for several years. He was getting in playground fights routinely. He was not reading at grade level. In fact, he was several years below grade level. And he was being suspended. And when the suspensions weren't changing his behavior, then the school moved to expel him. And we intervened and had them take a step back and, you know, did a number of things looking at each aspect of why he was doing poorly, put him in the right reading class so that he could catch up, got him away from the other kids that he was fighting with, because it was the same couple of kids he was fighting with over and over again. And we also identified that he was actually getting kicked out of class on purpose because he wanted to go to in-school suspension. So we came up with better incentives for him to behave appropriately to get what he wanted rather than to misbehave to get what he wanted. And that those combination of strategies kept him in school, and I would certainly hope, it's always hard to know for sure, but I would hope it kept him out of the justice system.
So you said it yourself that you knew a youth who wanted to be suspended because they didn't want to go to school anymore. So in what other ways is, you know, if we can't expel students who are causing problems in the classroom, what is a alternative resolution for these sorts of problems?
That's a good question and a common one that I get. I think a lot of us were raised with suspension as sort of a common response to serious behavior, although there are a lot more kids suspended today than when most of us were in school. And I think the people think it's common sense that when you have one kid causing problems and disrupting the class, you remove that kid and then things will be fine. The average number of days a kid is suspended are 3. So that means they'll be back. And you haven't really fixed the problem by removing them temporarily. So what we often have is a short-term fix or attempted fix for a much more long-term problem. Repeated suspensions, as in the case of the young man I worked with, often make things worse rather than better over time, partly because they're denied their education and they fall farther behind academically. I think another thing that we all need to recognize is that most adolescents, by self-report, break the law. Most of us did something, whether it was vandalism or shoplifting or used drugs or sometimes something more serious. Roughly 85% of us did that when we were young. Most of us didn't get caught. And even if we did get caught, the way that our schools or the police dealt with us may have had a lot to do with the color of our skin and who our parents were and what neighborhood we lived in. A lot of us didn't have the hammer come down on us when we did something bad. So I think part of this is recognizing that acting out and getting in trouble is part of normal kid behavior, adolescent behavior. So the approaches that are working and that we're moving towards really recognize that fundamentally, that we all get in trouble and it's part of learning. So we're going to use an approach that just assumes kids will act out and what they need is some guidance and some help to get back on track. One of those is called positive behavioral interventions and supports. And that starts generally in elementary school, in setting expectations for students and making them feel welcome in school so they feel part of the community, so that when they step out of line, the community deals with it as a community issue. It also emphasizes making students feel welcome so that all the teachers and all the administrators know students by name and know them individually and make them feel welcome. For older students, an approach called restorative justice is used a lot, and that's where the students have more control over setting the expectations of their community, and they're more involved in fixing problems when they happen and resolving conflicts. And I think, teaching them to do that is a skill that will serve them much better as adults. These are things that we need to be able to do as adults, and teaching them when they're students pays a lot of dividends, whereas if we just throw them out of school, a lot of conflicts go unaddressed.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Now I'd like to turn our attention to the guys at McLaren. Earlier you mentioned that OIA is the last stop on the School of the Prison pipeline. So a few weeks ago, I attended a class hosted at McLaren by Carlos Chavez. Here is what the guys had to say in response to the School of the Prison pipeline, along with their experiences in school.
Yeah, and they're talking about the different types of disparities and basically all the types of stuff that we've been talking about. So how do we fix that? And basically, we got to reverse a lot of the stuff that we talked about that's wrong with the system, but we also need to put things in place that kind of embrace and help a lot of these young kids out. You know, if they've got issues like, you know, if they have, there's kids that have disabilities, there's kids that have mental health related issues, there's kids that are dealing with trauma, there's kids that may just have something simple that just needs to be worked out, you know?
There's kids that are addicted to drugs.
Yeah, yeah. And so treatment is what's going to help something like that, you know, but something that's real, you know? Something that's real that's going to help them out. And it's got to be, there's got to be a variety of different things that can help that. So this is from a Teaching Tolerance publication of 2013. Increase the use of positive behavior, intervention, and supports. Okay, so try and encourage, you know, better behavior out of the youth. Try and create classroom environments where it's a lot more engaging, you know, and you're going to get better behavior out of the kids, you know, because if you have something that relates to them, if you have something that's relative, you know, they're going to respond to that. They're going to want to engage. They're going to want to be a part of that discussion. They're going to want to be a part of learning more about that. You know, if it's something that interests them, it's something that touches who they are, you know, that's going to make a difference, you know. But if they're just learning patterns, that gets boring. That gets old, you know. Compile annual reports on the total number of disciplinary actions that push students out of the classrooms based on gender, race, and ability. So a lot of that research is being done. So what they're saying is to do that more, especially at a localized level. So in the classrooms, you know, at the schools, start reporting. You know, what does that look like? You know, what are the disparities? What are some of the patterns that are happening with the youth that are coming in and out of those classrooms? You know, I mean, think about, like I said, I'm always, you know, thinking about these larger schools, you know, where you have huge populations of students, and all that you've got, you know, when the bell rings, is, you know, staff members, security, principals herding these kids into whatever direction they feel they need to go, whether it's going to the buses after school, or and they're clearing out the hallways afterwards to make sure that nobody's lingering around, you know, or the last day of school, you know, they're really trying to corral kids into certain areas. If they've got and if you have a huge school, that's a difficult thing to do, you know. And but what does that mean when all you're doing is just herding these kids around? You know what I mean?
No, you know what's crazy about that though is that when I went to North, I swear to you, like, on every corner there was at least a cop posted up just waiting after school every day. I was like, oh, hell no. Because then they always want you to go out to the front, too, or to the side of the school. For some reason, they're always pushing everybody out that way.
Well, that's a pattern that starts, is that they start waiting for those fringe youth to wander off, and then they just scoop them up. And the same thing that happens, like, with the, you know, the alternative high schools and stuff like that, the kids are going there because of disciplinary reasons. And so the you know, everybody, you know, in the justice system is like, okay, well, there's our next crop. Now we can just harvest. You know what I mean? It's, you know.
They basically get you ready for it at the alternative schools, because they, as soon as you get there, you got to get wanded, pat down, before you even get inside school.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're doing.
What does that look like?
For jail. That's all it is.
That's a good example. That's a really good example.
I remember going to alternative school and every morning, wanded, pat down, before you get in school.
Well, and then the other concern that a lot of folks have is that a lot of people feel that those alternative schools are, you know, aren't preparing them to get back into a regular school environment where they're able to have a regular curriculum going on. The curriculums there are a lot smaller. Sometimes they have stuff that's a lot better, I think. Like in some of the ways that they educate, it depends. It depends on the teachers. It depends on what type of flexibility that they have. But sometimes it's, you know, the classroom time is a lot less, you know, and the standards. A lot of those schools don't have to follow the same standards that the other schools are following. So then what are you preparing the kids there for? You know? So that becomes a concern.
They're not doing anything to kids. I mean, the alternative school that I heard from, it was like the teachers gave them packets and said, here's a work. And just do it.
You finish the packet, you get a credit.
Yeah.
No, teachers really didn't care.
That was easy. That's how easy it is.
The answers are right or not. They just said, here, you know. They're 20 them out of the school, so you
go play football.
So what does that do then?
It doesn't do anything, right?
It just gets you ready to stop going to school. Like, I don't even want to go, you know what I'm saying? I went to a school called North Star, and I swear to you, and I wasn't even in a special ed class, but it's an alternative school, so I'm not joking, bro. I go to school, you know what I'm saying? Teachers, we're sophomores. She's handing out candy, you know what I'm saying? We're drawing with freaking markers on the board, and in the next classroom, I go out there, I use the bathroom, you know what I'm saying? There's a llama in the classroom. And the kids are petting. I'm not playing. They're petting the llama. It's like my third day. I'm like,
so
I gotta go back to class.
How did your experience in like regular traditional public school compare to being transferred to an alternative school?
It made me feel like I have no business in school.
At all.
If I can't make it in normal school, I just can't make it. I just won't. There's a llama. What are we learning about here? You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to go back. I have no business here.
Like, did you enjoy public school more than you enjoyed alternative school? Or what were the pros and cons of those two experiences?
Well, public school, it was all right. But alternative school, it was kind of better because you didn't have to do as much. Like, you just get there, they give you something to keep you busy for a shorter amount of time and leave. That's it.
Did you feel like you were getting more attention when you were at the alternative school as opposed to a public school? Or, I mean, were teachers treating you differently?
It wasn't. It was less attention because they didn't really, it's like they really didn't care. It wasn't that, like, the public schools, they like try to get get you to do stuff, actually, and they just like, oh, here, if you want, finish this packet and turn it in, and you'll get credit for it. So it's not like they're teaching you how to do the work. They're just like, here, if you finish this, you get credit. And over there, they're teaching you actually, like, oh, this is how you get through the steps and stuff. It's just I never really cared for school like that.
How many of you guys went to alternative school?
Alternative high school? Alternative school.
I went to alternative school.
In a way, it is. Yeah. In a way, it is.
It sucks.
Well, but, okay, so the schools that you originated in, were there issues there? I mean, did you feel engaged there? Or, I mean, obviously, if you ended up in an alternative school, there probably was something that...
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't go to school.
Well, even in a regular school.
What was it? What would you say caused that?
It was certain classes that I wouldn't skip, you know what I'm saying?
PE.
There was an English teacher.
Everybody's sweat saying that. I didn't go to school, so I don't know. Yeah. Until I had to go. That's the only time I went.
How come you didn't go to school?
Just didn't want to go. It's work.
Yeah, same for me. I never graduated elementary school, middle school. I've been getting kicked out ever since elementary school. I got kicked out of all my schools.
Did the school have something to do with it, or would you say a lot of the outside elements had something to do with it? Or was it both?
Probably a lot of the outside elements, because I didn't care for school. I never thought it was going to help me until I got here and I started getting into school, like, because they make you go to school here. So that's when I was like, oh, this is easy. But when I was out, I really didn't think I'll need school. Like, I didn't care for it. That's why I got kicked out of every school I went to.
So that's another question that I have for you guys, is why is that? Why do you feel like it was so much easier once you were at McLaren to start going to school, and how does your experience in school compare to being forced to it?
That's all it is. It's just being forced.
Yeah, there's, like, you don't got no option unless you're over 21. You have to go to school, but then you sit here and there's nothing to do here. You want to do work. You want to do something to keep your mind busy.
Yeah. I feel like there's less distractions to it as far as school goes in, you know what I'm saying, in facilities like this, you know what I'm saying? Like, go to school, okay, you know what I'm saying? It's like the takes up freaking 7 hours of your day right there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You ain't worried about what I'm going to do after school or what I'm gonna wear to school, or that girl over there is bad, you know what I'm saying? None of that. You know what I'm saying? Get your calculator.
It's weird the different techniques that they have for the guys up here and the guys back there in the gear compound, because I've seen both. And it's like sometimes you, even up here, the rapport with the student, it comes to student to teacher or student to inmate. Back there, it's teacher to.
But I can't, no, because there's some teachers here that would teach.
There's certain that just whatever.
Same curriculum, go ahead, finish this stuff.
And there was like two or three teachers that actually tried to do something.
There was a while where I didn't feel welcome. Like after I skipped for so long, I'd be going for like 3 weeks or something. I come back to school with everybody. What's he doing here? Why is he back? Even the teachers. Are you the little flashlight? Go to the clinic. They're trying to flashlight
in your eye. You're like, are you tired?
Yeah, I've been like tired. This morning. They really don't
know.
Are you high?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the flashlight say?
So in case you are just now tuning in, that was a conversation amongst the young men currently incarcerated at McLaren discussing their experiences in public school and in alternative school. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that they talked about during that conversation. Anything right off the bat you want to comment on, Mark?
Well, certainly I heard that these are students who didn't feel welcome or wanted at the schools where they started out. And, you know, as I mentioned before, there's probably a 90% chance that they had been suspended or expelled, often multiple times. And they talked about being out of school for a while, and then they come back and other students and maybe their teachers are wondering why they're even there. One of the things I didn't mention earlier is that, you know, what we're finding out now is this pattern of suspension often starts in preschool and elementary school. So they've been getting that message for a long time, most likely. And that's the problem with using exclusion as a form of discipline, is you're disconnecting the student from their peers, from their teachers, from the curriculum that they're supposed to be learning, from the structure of the school. They end up adrift, and I don't think anybody should be surprised at all that they end up at McLaren if that's the kind of experience they've had.
Great. Before we end our program, I'd like to share a song written and performed by one of the guys at McLaren. Enjoy.
As a kid, I was broke, something had to be fixed. Got caught up in the mix with dreams to get rich. And as a boy, it ain't hard to find a G to look up to. Left my pops in the dark to wonder what I was up to. Light on my feet, I would creep on the streets. Always on my toes with some ice white sneaks. I would toke till I choked. When I reached my peak, I would seek another thrill, fold back another bill, and go and kick it with my cutties all in the veal. Death around the corner, so we stuck to the block, trying to hustle up enough to make my shoes match my watch. Thug life had me feeling like Pac. And way back then, it was about what set you in. At first, I tried to knock the life, kept knocking, and it let me in. Gave my life a spin like I was tipping 7 gin. Doses of that medicine kept my mouth stuck in the grin, they say. Life is a gamble, all I wanted was to win. But the bet was on my future and the debtor in the pen. Never say never, never, ever again, cause the actions of my past got me doing 5'10". You don't know, but those who love you see what you do. You don't know, but those who love you see what you do. 20 tension, plenty tension when I caught that case. It's been 4 years since they seen my face, but less tears, I'm right here. It took a lot of study, look at life as a test. I'm on a quest to eternity, internally I'm transformed. Windows of my soul became the eyes of that damn storm. Torn from the past, and a mask of my ego. Inside I'm life, y'all, I'm just another Negro. Zero to hero, cause I saved myself. And all the problems in my past, yeah, I blame myself. Bubbing my thoughts like my favorite song, refusing to listen to pops. I thought he had it wrong, but all along, you don't know, but those who love you see what you do. You don't know, but those who love you see what you. I was at that age, yeah, I thought life was a stage, thought that I had it made, and you